Hey there, Kyle Hilliard for MinMax here. This is a special discussion, not quite an interview, between two developers who worked on two different games that both happen to share a love of secrets. Andrew is the designer, programmer, and writer behind 2022's Tunic, and Reno was the programmer for 2013's Fez. Andrew and Reno talk about the influence of Fez, which is celebrating 10 years at the time of this recording, crafting unique alphabets and languages to help obscure puzzles, the importance of secrets, and how to design them with internet communities in mind. And Reno reminds us that Fez 2 lives on in our hearts, which, you know, is probably as good as it, you know, just not technically existing at all. There are some light spoilers about the end of Fez and some discussions around Tunic's language and secrets, but you don't have to worry about any overt puzzle solutions or major story spoilers. If you enjoy this discussion, you can find more like it and other interviews by subscribing to MinMax's YouTube channel. And if you really want to support content like this, you can unlock the podcast version of this discussion by supporting us directly on Patreon at patreon.com/minmax with two N's. Enjoy the discussion. Andrew, Renaud, welcome to MinMax. Thanks for joining us, you guys.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's awesome. I'm excited to talk to you guys because I like Tunic, I like Fez a lot, and I see some overlap between those two games. At least for, you know, Tunic, I see some inspiration coming from Fez. Am I on the right path here, Andrew? Is that fair?
Oh yeah, big time.
Okay, good.
Tunic is a game that is all about secrets, and it started there as being sort of a look back at games like The Legend of Zelda is usually one that people mention. You know, being set loose in this big world, you can just go out and explore. There are treasures out there. Go find them. And I had tried to articulate to myself, like, what is this all about? What is a good way of articulating this exact feeling? And I remember playing Fez and sort of seeing that it could be done, I guess, is like, wow, this is truly impressive. And then as Tunic developed, it took a lot of structural cues from Fez, you know, like, there might be spoilers for both of these video games on this call, I think. But
I was hoping there would be spoilers, because if not, we don't have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe we should say that up front, right? Like, there will be Tunic and Fez spoilers in here. Renaud, you've had a chance to play Tunic, I assume, yeah?
Yes, I have. I really enjoyed Tunic. I was already familiar with it because over the years I've played a handful of internal builds of Tunic in different shapes or forms, but it's been a long time since I had any contact with the game apart from the promotion material. But when it came out, I was very eager and I loved it. It's totally a game that's made for me. Like, the top games that I played recently that I really enjoyed were Hollow Knight, Death's Door, and then Tunic came in, and there's a kind of a pattern. This is the kind of game that I enjoy right now. And obviously, a game about secrets is very appropriate. It's the kind of thing that I like and that I like making. So it's, it was beautiful.
So there was some conversation between you guys during the course of Tunic's development.
Yeah, the indie game community is pretty small. And so I felt very privileged that Renaud was able to take a look at some of those early builds. I remember, I think in the comments of the code, there might be a //. Thanks, Renaud. Because there's this bug early on. It was something silly, like back when the way your sort of bloodstain analogy worked in the game, if you picked up what you had dropped, it replaced your current contents as opposed to adding to it. And you were like, this probably isn't supposed to work this way. I'm like, whoops. Yeah, you're right.
That's funny. You
know, a plus instead, or a plus equals instead of an equals.
Yeah. And congrats on Fez 10 years. That's like, we're talking about that this week, I guess, right?
Yeah, that was yesterday. So that was done the 13th. It's pretty crazy to think about. It's funny that this lined up, the fact that like there's a lot of people talking about Fez now, and then we're meeting up to talk about Tunic. So it's cool.
Yeah. So Renaud, let's rip off the spoiler band-aid. Let's talk about some of the biggest secrets that you ran into that you were really excited about.
There's so much. I actually wrote a list before this call because, like, I can't, like, it's, it, the games that I play, I get so immersed and so intensely into them for as long as they last. And obviously, Tunic is not a super long game, but there's a lot to it. And you can probably go much farther than I did if you want to go crazy. But I definitely stopped at one point. I didn't get all the artifacts. I didn't decrypt the language. I kind of know where this is going. But even in Fez, honestly, like I look at the language sometimes. There was a thing tweeted by Polytron this week with a message in the Zoo language, and I looked at it. I was like, "Oh God, I don't want to get back into this again." So, like, if it's mechanics driven, if it's goals with mechanics, this is where I get super invested, and I want to learn, and I want to be able to recognize things. So, I mean, obviously, the Holy Cross was a big wow moment for me. It's interesting because I was spoiled how it worked via Twitter. I just posted screenshots, and one of my friends said, "Like, so did you figure out the D-pad dance?" I was like, "What's the D-pad dance?" I was like, "Well, I can tell you." I was like, "Well, I think I just figured it out." Oh. At the beginning, I was like, "Can I make that fox dance? That would be amazing." But no, it's a bit more pragmatic than that. But it's still, even not being spoiled, I still enjoyed it so much because it opened up the secrets path earlier than it should have, but it didn't break anything. Like, it's not a sequence break to be able to do secrets earlier on. And it actually made the traversal of the game a little bit more exciting because there's less backtracking. It's not like you have to do the main path and then go back and redo all the things you noticed. Like, I was able to do them a little bit at my pace, whether I felt like doing like advancement of the main quest or if I felt like doing some metagame stuff. It was a nice little pepper like through the gameplay. So I really enjoyed that.
It's interesting that you talk about getting spoiled about it, because I remember it's amazing how subtle something like that can be, because I remember playing Fez, I guess, you know, 10 years ago, and somebody had some innocuous tweet that was just like, "Ah, you jerks," and it's a photo of a little fox and a little dog, and that was the moment where I'm like, okay, yep, that's it. All suddenly came together. It only took a little bit of a tipping point to realize, like, okay, you've got, like, this is the Rosetta Stone, I'm gonna find that, and it all came together.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the hope also, like, this room, there's nothing else in it. It's just, you look at the thing, if you recognize the tableau and you understand the analogy, you're getting at it, or else I guess it's lost on you. But what's fine about the alphabet, and I guess it's the same in Tunic, is that it's non-critical. Like, there's nothing that requires you to understand how to read this language, but I guess you get a lot more out of the game if you do, or you can. Yeah. You can.
That was definitely an explicit design decision. It was more, the language exists in Tunic to be like, to make people feel, I'm not supposed to be here. This world is not made for me. And so it was sort of early on, oh, wouldn't it be neat if it actually said something too? And I mean, now today we've got people sort of, you know, building giant codices of all the pages of the manual translated and stuff like that. So awesome. We wanted to make sure that no, you know, there are one or two things that require you have sussed out what it means, but most of it, you didn't have to, for reasons of just being kind, but also it's inherently, it's not just Anglo-centric, but it's written in sort of a neutral leading to Eastern Canadian accent, which was sort of tricky working with, well, not tricky, but interesting working with people in different parts of the world, you know, even just West Coast Canada coming to correct me and saying like, oh, this phoneme should be used in this different way.
Oh yeah, because it is it's syllabic, right? It's
phonetic. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, spoilers, that's
right. We took the Band-Aid off. Right. Good.
That's right.
How do you create? I mean, you guys didn't really create a language per se, but you both created separate alphabets, kind of, right? Well, what is the first step of something like that? I don't even know.
Well, for Fez, it was not me. It was definitely Phil. I mean, behind a lot of the mysteries and secrets in Fez is 100% Phil, because he came up with this world and he came up with a lot of the elements that coincided. And like some aspects, of course, we jammed and talked about possible solutions to problems, and especially with gameplay. But metagame stuff is like entirely his. And I believe his brother was involved because he was big into linguistics as well. Don't know, but in the case of Fez, it's a little bit simpler because it is a substitution cipher letter by letter for English, except a couple of consonants. But the interesting about it is that it maps to a cube and it's rotational. So, like, there's only, there actually have, I believe here.
Oh, do you have the stamp?
Little, I have a 3D printed little
that's so
letter
cool.
tube. I don't use it as a stamp because it would ruin it, but it can be used to, like, on a stamp in like a Play-Doh right. or something.
If you're listening, Reno just held up, it would almost look like a dice to his camera, and that helps you translate things.
It's what the lore, I guess, is what these people used to write. They would use this as a, well, it doesn't really make sense because they're all indented in the rock, like in the game. So I guess it would, like, I don't know how that works.
Negative space. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's super cool. I admire that so much, of having that internally consistent sort of, here's the artifact that would be used to produce this text, and it exists in these three dimensions, and having that all connected is very cool.
Yeah, that's a talent of Phil, to put everything together in a very consistent way. Very cool.
I was going to follow on about this, the language, the beauty, I think, of that in Fez was that, I don't know, it feels like we were in a pre-Fez world, and then we were in a post-Fez world. And pre-Fez, you know, I'm playing this game and I see a bunch of cool looking runes and think, that's neat. And at least I wasn't the sort of person at the time that would bust out graph paper and start sort of doing frequency analysis or anything like that, although I know lots of people did. And then the reveal of, no, then all of that means something was cool. And the fact that it's just a substitution cipher means that the reveal is the important part. And so when it came time to do something similar for Tunic, and it was mostly about feeling like you didn't belong or whatever, it couldn't just be a substitution cipher, because we live in a post-Fez world. People know about that. They see a secret language, and it's time to, you know, figure it out from the get-go. So needed to be a little bit more obtuse, a little bit less clear where the letter delineations were, that sort of thing. And so I think that's, it makes it somewhat less interesting, because it is a more complex thing that means that it is pushed further out. Like, most people are not going to do it. Most people that play Fez are probably going to figure out this language. But in Tunic, it sort of needs to fall off that edge of what most people are willing to do.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, the fact that English words, or I guess whichever language you're playing, are peppered through the instruction, instruction manual, and also in the prompts, it made me think, like, of course, that's probably a common reference, but like a Japanese import game, of like you're getting a game that comes from another culture, another language, the references are at least like games that we know, but still, I was able to piece together by context almost all the time what they kind of meant. Like, if it is crucial to gameplay, you could kind of see it and see, well, there's this iconography, there's this English word that I know, and also the emphasis, and like, there's enough elements of context to try to piece together. And it's a little bit like a child trying to learn a language, but I didn't care about learning a language as it's presented, just to try to get the information and grasp it. And it's the same for all the cards that you get over time in Tunic. Like, it's not spelled out what they do, but you get those little scribbles, but you get these informations that are scattered, and of course the changes in the UI when you apply them. So the combination of all of that, you're like, oh, well, you make a reasonable guess for everything, and when you get it right, it's really exciting. So there's so much of that that's really fun.
That's awesome to hear, because that is exactly the intent, that feeling of, I mean, I didn't have the experience of looking through old Japanese manuals when I was a child. But that same experience of leafing through a manual and just not knowing all the words, and like, maybe you haven't seen the game before and you're just looking at the manual. You're trying to figure out, like, what is all this about?
Like, I didn't have the Japanese import game experience at all either, but being a French speaker in a mostly English game world, a lot of the games that I played, if they were text heavy, were learned by context. And sometimes I had no idea what was going on because I couldn't read English. Yeah. But cultural references and just like gameplay references, like, oh, this is probably what they're saying. And like, I loved RPGs like Lunar and the Sega CD and stuff, and so text heavy. And I did, like, all the jokes flew right past my head. But it's fine. Like, I was enjoying it, and it was beautiful. And like, I guess maybe that's why it's so nostalgic to me, the playing in Tunic.
That's cool. I've heard that from some, so the Tunic is local, even though it has very little text, like the XLS is like 700 lines long of that, which is tiny for most game localization. And most of it is like options and, you know, how to spell new game. But so we were able to localize it to like, you know, almost 30 languages. And I've had some people mention that, like, oh, this reminds me, you know, of getting a game, you know, in Spain. You know, I'm getting a game in Spain, but it's written in English, and trying to like figure out, you know, especially children who maybe don't know a whole lot of English, whether it's because they're just children or adults living in other countries or whatever. That experience seems like it's a cool one that is, I guess, sort of serendipitous. I hadn't considered that.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Please go ahead. I always cut me off if you keep going.
Sorry, I think maybe a slight delay here. I don't have it within arm's reach, but the instruction manual for Zelda 2 is here, and that there was a specific Canada version where every block of text is mirrored with Canadian French right underneath it, which makes for an unusual reading experience. But it was sort of a neat thing to do as a kid, to look through that thing and be like, oh, this is how you say shield in French or whatever.
Yep. Law 101.
I'm curious, especially for you, Andrew, of like how you approach puzzle solving in the internet age. I mean, obviously it was a factor with Fez. The internet existed when Fez came out. But I'm just curious from both of you, knowing that people on the internet would sort of work together to solve things, how does that change your, you know, puzzle approach?
I'm super curious about the Fez answer on this one. I mean, I could start. There are some considerations about trying to hide things super deeply because people can, you know, take binaries and decompile them or whatever. I think, in fact, maybe an early conversation with you, Renaud, made me realize, like, oh, right, once people have the bits, they can just look at them. But one thing that we realized pretty early on is that people like secrets. And if we're sitting down to play a game because we like secrets, we're probably not just going to bust out game facts immediately, right? The joy is in the discovery. And realizing that people like to, you know, the reason that we are so careful about spoilers and spoiler tags is because we know people like to keep things secret. And generally speaking, they do that. And even on the Fingy Discord, where people come in and say, hey, I need help, people will use spoiler tags and they will not just tell them what to do, but give oblique hints, you know. Oh, have you? Sounds like you haven't taken a close enough look at page 23 or whatever. Or have you tried looking over here? And that's wonderful, because just as those old manuals were extensions of the game design of, you know, games of the 1980s, it's almost like the community is an extension of the design as well, where they can dole out these sort of cagey hints. It's really nice to see. We did do our best to hide one or two things a little bit more deeply and not give many clues about them, though.
Yeah, there's layers, right? There's always stuff that's you're supposed to grasp on the first time, some stuff that is not going to be grasped by everyone, but they can probably figure it out with some help, and some stuff that they're almost not even meant to understand alone or for a very long time. Obviously, there's a lot of that in Fez also, and it's even like tiered, I believe, equally in Tunic and in Fez, where like there's the regular cubes, which are just progress markers, the anti-cube, the blue ones, which are like they're secrets. They're meant to be obscure, and you don't have to get them to finish the game. And then there's the artifacts, which are just, and the pieces of heart, which is even more like there's layers upon layers of things that are supposed to be obscure and supposed to be deeply rooted in a deep understanding of the game or just looking at a fact. And either is fine. But I like you're asking whether the game was designed with community collaboration in mind. I think it was designed with that schoolyard mentality of people renting the game and talking, hey, did you see this? Did you hear about this? Have you tried this? Have you tried laying in the grass for 3 seconds or whatever at this location? Like, this stuff is exciting, and it's stuff that I guess we have a fondness for as a concept. So it was built probably with that in mind, and the fact that people were supposed to take notes, were supposed to get immersed. But like going as far as like we're expecting people to brute force the game, I don't think that was even on our mind. Like, this is stuff that just happens as a result of being bored in this era and being not very well obfuscated, and that's fine. So it's just, it happens because people really want to understand, really want to dig, and it's, we embrace it. That's fine.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of an extension of that question, but like, where is the, because like every time a new From Software game comes out, there's a conversation around like trusting the player and like having confidence in the player. And I feel like both Fez and Tunic have a lot of confidence in the player. And I think that's a factor of difficulty. And, you know, where's the line in a puzzle that's like too difficult? I would love to hear you guys talk about that.
It's a good question. Like the puzzle design aspect, I can't speak that much for. Fez as a platformer is an easy game. Like there's not a lot of actual like real challenge. There's a couple of challenge levels which are meant to be a little bit more like you got to get a sense of the physics and stuff. But there's no enemies. The biggest punishment, and I figured out like while playing yesterday with my kids, is falling and not dying because you lose progress and you don't respawn. So like there's weird corner cases of like, well, I wish I died there because at least I would have kept my up position. But like it's for the gameplay, it's meant to be very accessible and broad, and everybody can play it and everybody can enjoy it, and it's supposed to be a pleasant experience. And it's supposed to, I guess, lay the groundwork for a reflection, for being in a room and sitting down and listening to the music and trying to understand what's going on. So how far you go with this is, I guess it goes back to layers, right? You got to give at least a little bit of the game to everyone so that they get to a level of their satisfaction and they cut to a place where I don't want to do this anymore. This, I get what you're doing, but this is too much. And even for Tunic, I had that of like, I saw the little musical notes, scribbles, and I understood what that was leading to, and I went to the place, and I listened, and I was like, ah, this is clever. I don't feel like writing it down right now. I could probably do it, but I mean, the fact that I kind of know where this is going, and I don't want to spend, I guess, do the extra mile. Some people will, but that's, I mean, it's not for me, and I'm sure that the people have said that about Fez so many times to me, of like, yeah, I got my fill, and glad you did. That's fine. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So getting to the point where it's like, I realize there's a language, but I'm not going to do the translation. That's not for me. Or seeing that there's a puzzle and being like, aha, I understand what's going on, and not doing the sort of footwork for it. I think I'm the same way a lot of times, because for me, the excitement is the not knowing. And once you know, it's like, oh, this is just work now. Like you've already solved the puzzle in your mind. You would really just be confirming it. And if you're 100% sure, then, you know, the fun is over. Now it's just execution.
Yeah. It's funny because the Golden Cross, I had a misunderstanding on the execution of how you're supposed to do the motions. And I stuck with that misconception for a very long time because it worked. So I thought that you were not supposed to let go of the D-pad, where like you start doing it and you kind of like have to press and keep pressure of at least having either one or two inputs pressed at the same time. I was like, this is frustrating, but I get why he did this, because it must be simpler not to have false positives, or like there must be a reason it fits with the world because the line is continuous, so I need to keep holding it. I was like, this hurts my thumb. Like, how do you do this on PC? Like, that's such a weird decision. I was talking with one of my friends about it, and he says, you don't have to do that. I'm like, yeah, I tried the other way. It didn't work. So I'll try again. It works both ways. Oh, okay. Well, that's way simpler. So it's funny because it's so, like, at least at that time, I didn't even get the game explaining it to me. It was just based on hearsay and, I guess, the schoolyard thing of, like, somebody told me that it was done that way, so I guess it's done that way. And it works, so why not? So it's hilarious.
That's... I've heard that once or twice also, that people are trying to keep the thumb down. So I wonder if there's some subtle.
Well, for me, it was the fact that it was a continuous line. For some reason, it registered that way in my head, but there's no, like, that's just speculation. And when the speculation work, you internalize it. And that's what's dangerous.
That's the schoolyard thing is neat, because this is sort of like the other edge to that double-edged sword. Is sometimes it's cool when somebody says, it's always cool when somebody says, hey, did you know about this secret? You can do this, that, and the other thing. It's even cooler when someone comes up with something that is partially or not at all true. But then you have this problem where people start spreading, like there's a lot of things that I've seen where it's parrying, double tap shield to parry. No, it's not. It's just a single tap. But it's so ingrained in people. And there's a secret passage or two that has existed for a while since, you know, the demo that we had out. And the elaborate interactions that people have cited as the way that you open these secret doors is just, you just stand in front of it and press the A button. That's all you need to do. It's like, you know, kind of roll at it at just the right angle. And no, it's fine. And I like that. I like that the sort of weird cloud of mystique around these sorts of things.
Yep. And when I got later in the very elaborate Holy Cross, Golden Cross, I forget. Anyway, like when you get to the very long ones, I had trouble, even if I had like a picture of it or like it very accessible such that I could do it, it was hard for me to reproduce it just because I got lost. I'm like, have I gone down this corner already or have I not? So I actually wrote, I'm not going to say design, but like there's a transcription that I did, which is just, am I like, which direction do I start with in that phrase? And then am I going clockwise or counterclockwise? And the number of times. And it's super easy. At a glance, I was able to do it much easier this way because it's just like two lefts. It's not lefts, but it's just like clockwise, like rotating, around clockwise.
Yeah.
Yeah, going around, which of course it's rotation based, but it's like it made it a lot easier for me to, well, it takes some time, right? I had first the big puzzle and then I wrote the letters for each, but then afterwards, at least I was able to do it from the first from the first attempt without getting lost.
Ah, that's super cool.
I thought that was nice that at least it's simple enough that it can be designed with just two variables of like, which way are you going?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's always continuous. Like you're not going to go from one end to the other.
Yeah. Yeah. Ah, that would be neat. That would be like an alternate representation, almost like the way that the numerical system exists alongside the, in Fez, the numerical system exists alongside the letters. Yeah, that'd be cool. Renaud, do you want to make a game together sometime?
I'm busy, man. I have kids now. But I mean, yeah, I would love that. I would truly do.
I mean, I don't want to influence you guys in any way, but you know, Fez 2 existed for a little while and then it kind of disappeared. Maybe it's time to, you know, to bring it back. Just an idea.
Well, it exists in your heart now.
That's really the perfect place, right? Then it can be anything. It's like a sealed door. You know, at that point it's nothing but possibility.
Exactly.
We talked, Renaud has talked a bit about his favorite moments in Tunic. Andrew, I'm curious what your strongest memories of Fez are.
Strongest memories of Fez. Well, actually the first one that came to mind is, early morning alarms, to get the clock tower. I wasn't going to mess with the system clock. That seemed like cheating. And I still have, I was cleaning out my office recently and sort of consolidating a bunch of notebooks. And I found my Fez notebook and looking at that and being like, this was what this game was to me, is just speculating and poring over things. And with Fez and a lot of puzzle games, my favorite part is not the, like, you know, the execution. It's the seeing different parts of the world and speculating about how they might be connected. You know, is this closed door solved by this question mark of a clue that I've seen over here? You know, how are these parts related? Because especially with Fez, it's so, like it folds over itself so many times. As you layer things on, you realize that there's, you know, internally consistent threads such as, oh, this is how the language would be stamped out, right? This is a physically plausible way that this would happen. Or, you know, what do the crows even mean? Or the owls, rather. What are they all about?
Like, what do the crows mean?
Yeah, good question. So that sort of, and I don't know if they mean anything, but the fact that there's still, like, you know, a puzzle piece in my mind that has not yet attached to something, it's the same thing. It's nothing but possibility, and that's the most exciting thing of all. But yeah, those are my memories of Fez. And I like to let a game, give the emotions that it wants to me, if that makes sense, sort of give myself over to it and, you know, sit and feel the emotions that I'm supposed to feel as I'm doing it. And sometimes that could be hard, but it is not hard with Fez. The reverence, the final ascent on the moon, question mark, whatever it is such a beautiful moment, and the ending with that. I remember ages ago, Renaud, I watched a talk that you gave, and you said something about that ending sequence being originally a video file, or you wanted to render it out as a video file, or Phil did, but it's just like, no, you have 200 megabytes, and that's it.
Yeah, that was like, because we were short on time and we were having to do these two cutscenes, and we had potential access to like motion graphics animators that would have been able to do a really good job at like doing Phil's vision quickly and well. But it would have to be rendered as a video file that we would have had to play back. And because of the limitations of working on XNA in C# for Xbox 360 at the time, it was really hard to get a good looking video playing back at like 720p 30fps with not that much compression. Like the file size was not that much of an issue as I remember, maybe RAM, but then again, it's streamed. I think it was really just quality. I was trying to play like tweak settings and trying to find a video format that would play back, and it always looked like crap. And I was like, this is all 1 pixel red lines. Like, can you think of a worse thing for video compression?
Yeah.
So it was not going to happen. So I was like, well, I'll just do it. And it's fine because I'm such a big fan of the demo scene and 3D demos.
You wrote all that?
Yeah. So I did based on storyboards from Phil, and the timing, like we talked about when things should happen, how, and obviously track the music. But everything was just like geometry going around and rendered and zoomed in and repeated. So it was really fun. One of the parts that I remember most fondly is working on those two cutscenes.
Yeah.
Trying to get the effects right.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I had no idea that you were typing that out. Like, was there an authoring tool involved, or was that?
No, it's all code.
Wow, holy smokes.
That's most of FES, though. I mean, we did have a level editor and a geometry editor, but so much of it is just, like, there's no Unity, it's XNA, so type stuff out. And the good thing is that, and I was playing even this week as I was talking on Twitter about the tools and everything that, and fun facts about FES development. And I just opened the code base and pressed F5 and the game starts instantly. I was like, oh, those were the days. Like, it's so light. It's so, like, there's nothing to it. There's even not that much code. It's simple, even though it's very intricate, and it took a long time to make because it was such a big achievement for us at the time, and it, I guess in general, to make your first game. But it's tiny in retrospect.
Wow. Yeah, that's wild. I feel like you probably made the right decision with those end videos. Like, they are timeless because they are. You wouldn't see the grunge of 2012 on it with video compression. My memories of them are at a higher fidelity than 720, 30. Like, were they running at 60 just because it was just like nothing but GeoDraw line or whatever?
No, man, it runs at whatever frame rate you have set up. Like, it runs at 60 on most platforms.
Yeah, okay.
It's just, I was saying 720, 30 because that was the baseline of what we wanted to achieve.
Oh, sure, sure.
Even that for video would have been a bit rough compared to the rest of the game.
Yeah, of course. I wasn't calling you out on incorrect numbers from 10 years ago. More just like it is so, it was shocking, I feel like. I was seeing that and seeing how buttery and elegant it was really something.
You were talking about your first playthrough of Fez and your memories and stuff, and like making Fez at one point, I was very focused on just making it work, and Phil was very focused on making the metagame make sense and making all these puzzles and designing everything about the world and how it's laid out and how things reference that. And I was seeing this and I was like, nobody's gonna go that far. Like, I was, I guess, the voice of reality, or not even like reality, but I felt like I was kind of grounding him and saying like, you don't need to go that far, or this is too much. Like, I personally, I would not do the things that you ask players to do. It seems crazy to me. And then when people said like, this is what I love about Fez, like the game is a thing, but then everything around the game and everything that you have to discover and everything that's not said is what's fascinating about it. I was like, that's crazy. Like, of course I knew it had potential and it had legs because I trust Phil. But at the same time, I was like taken aback by how how much of a lasting effect it had, and the how much of an effect it had on everybody that played the game. And when I played Tunic, I felt like I was on the other side of the mirror a little bit, because it's maybe one of the first times in when playing games that I understood how, like, of course, a well-designed experience and a well-paced like discovery of the game, even like stuff that's fairly obvious, like getting the first pages and stuff, like when it's paced the right way and when you reveal things at a really satisfying pace, how great it is. But also, like, when you figure stuff out on your own based on like cryptic clues, how amazing it feels, and just the feeling of like being thrown in this world that you don't quite understand. And of course it's great, like, I don't know why. Probably because like playing making a game for so long, you stop understanding what's great about it. And that's true of any game, I think, like, you just don't get the appeal anymore. But like when you're thrown into a different one that has the same level of care or even more, I would say, like, it's outstanding. It's so great.
Wow, that's high praise. Thank you, Renaud.
Are there any... Oh, please, go ahead, Andrew. We must have like a little bit of delay or something, because but please, go ahead.
Yeah. Nope, nothing. Go for it.
Oh, I was just going to ask if there are any lingering secrets in either Tunic or Fez. Is there anything that the internet hasn't uncovered yet? I imagine Fez has been pretty well examined at this point, but what about Tunic?
Tell me about the monolith, Renaud.
Oh, God. I can't. They'll kill me. No, but honestly, I can't. I think the world of Fez and the code of Fez and everything has been like passed with a very fine comb over time by the community and everybody. That still does not mean that Fez is entirely understood. I think there's stuff that deliberately is a very... how to say that in words? There's stuff that's either left unsaid or left partially said or just left said in a way that is not necessarily intelligible. And I think it's going to remain that way forever. And this is Fez. You can't have it any other way, right? Mm-hmm. That's all I can say.
Once you get into the realm of interpretation or, intent, then, you know, every creative work is, you know, theoretically an infinite well, but Fez especially feels like it's got just a mystique around it that I think is valuable, right? Like, that's...
I think so.
Yeah, but looking through every bit to find all the secrets means that something can be, sort of rendered joyless. You know, we dumped out the entire thing. There's nothing, no need to look at this anymore. We figured it all out. That's no fun at all, right? That's antithetical to the idea of discovery and this feeling of there always being something a little bit more.
And do you feel that way about Tunic as well, right? Do you think there's still things left undiscovered and unsaid about Tunic?
Well, if there's a gamer treat at the end of it, you know, then obviously people have found it, you know. If there is a asset in the game that requires you to do something absurd or counterintuitive to find it, maybe people have found those as well. But like Renaud said, there are things that are, I guess, just for me, right? And that is... I would never say, hey, there's you did it. You figured it out. You know, there's nothing left in this thing for you. So you can take this with a grain of salt. But there are a couple of things that some people have found, but a lot of people have not. And at least one or two things that I haven't seen explicit reference to that I don't think anybody is going to find, because it's not like you stumble across something and say, hey, here's a secret. We did it. That's the last one. 100%, because it's not. It's only meaningful in a particular way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I wanted to also ask you guys specifically about Monument Valley, because I feel like that's another game that's almost like a little bit of a Venn diagram. I see a little bit in Tunic. I know there's a direct reference to Fez in Monument Valley. Do you guys like that game? That very well-regarded game?
It's great. It's been a very long time since I played it, but I remember it leaving a big impression of me on me by the level of quality that it was. Also, for like as an experience, as a small game on iPhone that ran extremely well, that looked beautiful, that was like intricate and worked great with touch controls. I felt like it was just a beautiful package, right? A beautiful little thing. And of course, it had rave reviews, and I guess the references because of the cubism, the asymmetric, but I feel like it's its own thing entirely, but I respect it so much.
I enjoyed it. The visuals in particular were definitely an influence, like being able to have, they play with isometric perspective a great deal, and do some very tricky things with it. But even just those little vignettes or sandboxes and how they look, this idea of, you know, exploring something that's visually flat, even though it's geometrically complex, and using broad gradients to communicate form when you don't have depth information because of the orthographic projection was definitely an influence for me, I think.
Very cool. Andrew and Renaud, do you guys have any burning questions for each other that maybe we haven't touched on yet?
Let me check. It's funny because the list of things that I wrote is just me gushing about the game, and like I think I've done plenty of that, so I'm trying to think, is there anything else I actually have to ask in there? Nothing comes to mind.
Yeah,
right,
Renaud, I'm curious. I mean, we could even talking a little more about Fez. I mean, it's 10 years. Like, what where else have you seen sort of Fez sort of presented in other games or even in other media? Like, where have you identified its legacy in this past decade?
I don't know. In actual products, like I've heard so many people saying like, oh my God, I played Fez and it opened my mind about the possibilities of indie games or like the accessibility of game development. And like it really prompted me wanting to look more into this because I felt like, I don't know, it kind of clicked so much for some people that they thought like I should give this indie game dev a shot, which is like, I mean, I hope it worked out for you guys. It's a hard world out there now. It's a different world. But it's really cool to see how many people it inspired. I don't think people said like, I'm going to do Fez with a twist. Like that doesn't make sense. Right. I think the ideas of Fez are already a love letter to so many other games and to the past. And I think Fez probably has like some seeds in other media, but I can't say that I've identified it like very clearly. It feels like it's just maybe it opened up like the possibility of. Then again, like it's not like Fez was the first game to move secrets. It's just maybe it was so deep into it and so hands off that probably some people saw it as an actual possibility. You can make this. You can make a game that obscure, and then people are going to hang on to it and really grasp if you do it well. So that's fortunate. I want to see more of that. So that's great.
Yeah, I mean, both too. I think, right, like you're right. Like Fez didn't invent secrets in games, but in the past, I feel like they were bonuses, right? Where Fez and also Tunic, I really feel this way, like, kind of like secrets are front and center, and that's really exciting, and I really like both for that reason.
Front and center, but also just beneath the surface, like there's lots there, but when you look at it initially, maybe you don't see them. Like that was the revelation with Fez for me, is playing a game like, oh, this is fun, jumping around, and then slowly coming to the realization, not that there's, I mean, there are some key moments where the beans are spilled, but realizing that you could have stubbed your toe on secrets just beneath the surface for ages now, like they're all over the place, and that's really wonderful.
Yeah, the Witness comes to mind. I don't know that John Blow really thought of Fez when he made that, but because it's definitely his brainchild. But like there's elements of that, of like understanding a language and then seeing it everywhere. It's what sticks with me from that experience.
Well, Andrew, Renaud, I really appreciate you guys taking the time. It was awesome to hear you guys discuss game development. Sometimes I didn't know what you were talking about, and I really like that. I enjoy that.
That's great.
What kind of stuff do you guys want to plug? I mean, Andrew, obviously Tunic. Is there anything else you want to make sure you plug?
No, I think that's basically it. I've got nothing. That was it. You know, 7 years later, and it's I'm not working on anything new. But yeah, Tunic is available on. It was a day one Xbox Game Pass, so go play it now if you've got that. It's also available on Steam and other Mac PC storefronts.
How about you, Arno? What are you working on right now?
I'm going to plug Tunic as well. Tunic is really good. You should play it.
Well, if that's the case, what's the best place for people to get Fez these days?
Oh, my God. The best place. There's a lot of places. I really enjoy the Vita version, but it's probably hard to come by right now. I like the Switch version. It's really good. PC version is really good also. It's not available on all the platforms, but a lot of them.
Switch, within the last year or two is when it came to Switch? Yeah.
And it was made in collaboration with Blitz Softworks, who worked on Spelunky 2 and did also all the PlayStation versions of Fez in the past. And they've got a really good optimized code base for Fez that runs well on everything now. So that's cool.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, you guys. I really appreciate the time. And I'm glad we're able to connect you guys.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much.
Yep, love to talk.